It's Brooke Roberts here from the New Zealand Black Sticks, and you're listening to the Half Court Press podcast.
Hi, my name is Darcy Bourne. I'm an England GB and Serbs and hockey player, and you're listening to the Half Court Press podcast.
Hi, this is Rowan Harris. I'm the goalkeeper of the Canadian national field hockey team, and this is the Half Court Press podcast.
Hi, I'm Faye Burnett, and I play for Wimbledon, Scotland and GB, and you're listening to the Half Court Press podcast.
This is Pumela Mbande, South African hockey captain and goalkeeper. You're listening to the Half Court Press podcast.
The latest season of the Half Court Press podcast takes a look at several players who have been entertaining us at this summer's tournaments and elsewhere. In Hockey Player Profiles, Teo McLeod talks to several international players within the sport of hockey about their lives, careers and backgrounds.
Hi, this is Alicia Power here from the Hockey Roos, the Australian women's hockey team, and you're listening to the Half Court Press podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Half Court Press podcast. Today we are joined by one of the goalkeepers for one of the best hockey teams in the world, Alicia Power. Hey Alicia, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
All the better for talking to you this morning for me. I think it's more sort of mid-afternoon for you, isn't it?
Afternoon, ready to go.
Is it Western Australia you're based in, is it?
Yes, I'm based in Western Australia, Perth. Yeah.
So down the road from friends of the podcast, the Reverse Stick podcast.
Yes. Yeah, probably. I've heard of them, but I haven't had much to do with them. But yeah.
I know one of them listens. So, hey, Matt.
Hey.
Alicia, can you introduce yourselves, please, for the hockey nerds out there who've watched a lot of hockey this summer, that would be quite familiar with you. But for those who haven't, can you give us a little background about who you are?
Yeah, so my name's Alicia Power, obviously. I'm 25 years old this year, and I'm a member of the Hockey Roos, the women's national hockey team. Yeah, I play hockey semi-professionally in Australia. Obviously, we're not full-time athletes here. What else about me? I have degree in nutrition. I have a lot of weird qualifications. I do a lot of random jobs as side hustle. Yeah, that's kind of basically who I am as a person. But yeah, I was a member of the Hockey Roos team who played at the World Cup this year and the Commonwealth Games.
So what club do you play for in Australia?
Yeah, so I play for Victoria Park Hockey Club. I moved there in 2020. I used to play at Curtin University Hockey Club. But yeah, so I've been a member of the Victoria Hockey Club for 3 years now, 2020. We've won back-to-back and we're going for a third this year.
There's a new sort of franchise league in Australia as well, isn't there? The Hockey One League.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's our new... what we used to call our like state competition, where like you'd represent your state. So I'd represent WA and play all the other states. And that was kind of like our top league in Australia. So club isn't necessarily our top league. So we have our club leagues in our own states. Then we'd go represent our states, but it's been refranchised and kind of trying to get more, attraction to the sport, and there's like a lot of advertising and marketing and all that sort of thing, and a couple like rule changes. So if you score a field goal, you get an automatic shootout for a conversion. So that's kind of like the excitement of the game, to try and encourage more field goals. But yeah, it's called Hockey One. So I will play with the Perth Thundersticks. So it's moved away from state to franchises. So my franchise is the Perth Thundersticks, and that's who I'll be playing for starting October.
So you're semi-professional, part of the centralised program in Australia.
Yeah.
Tell us about your degree, your nutritional degree.
Yeah, so I did a Bachelor of Science Nutrition very casually, obviously training and then having to work as well. And then study, you kind of have to have a balance. So I did it very part-time since I was 18. I just graduated at the end of last year. So I'm qualified in nutrition. I haven't worked as a nutritionist yet. In Australia, you kind of have to do further study to be recognized by the health system. So I'd have to do a 2 years master of dietetics to kind of work clinically, if that makes sense. So currently qualified as a nutritionist, you can work kind of holistically, but yeah, so that's kind of the next stage of my life when I decide to start that.
How's that all work out with Hockey Australia? I know England's GB hockey, they come across as being quite supportive. I know Tess Howard recently graduated. Apparently you're quite sort of supportive of, I think it's like a holistic idea. Yeah. Apparently the England GB hockey found out that being uber focused on hockey led to burnout in their players.
Yeah.
Is there similar sort of support from Hockey Australia?
I think there was a big shift away from being like full on hockey. I think maybe after Rio, I think that's the same maybe with GB. Like, I think there were a couple teams that went through that phase where they were like, we need to be more than just hockey players and we need to have balance. And yeah, I think like the whole burnout, sometimes even though it's sometimes it's just mental, it has a physical impact on how you play. So there's been quite a shift to being more, having more of a work-life balance and hockey balance, and trying to make people holistic and good people, and having those foundations outside of just hockey. So yeah, I think there's a lot of support. You can reach out and ask for help. Yeah, we have like usually have like a person, our like, I don't really know the name of it, careers. Yeah, we have a person who kind of is the middleman of, you know, what do you need from uni? What do you need from hockey? Like, and kind of, yeah, that support. So, yeah.
I think it's been a bit of a stepping stone towards like greater mental health issues, support and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you put all your eggs in one basket and something doesn't pay off, there can be a huge detrimental effect on your mental health. So, you know, if something goes wrong at hockey, I know that I can just go back into my work or my friends and I have that time to do that, so I can feel supported and feel like I'm achieving off the field, and that then flow on effect means I then achieve on the field because I know that I'm very grounded off the field and I have that support, versus just having hockey and that being the only thing I have in my life. So when something happens, I get injured or, you know, selection or something like that, it's not going to be the end of the world. And I think that's kind of what they're trying to do, build athletes to have that platform to fall back on, I guess.
The Half Court Press is now on Patreon. Patreon is a well-known and trusted online platform that allows our fans to support the sports journalism that we create. We offer a tiered subscription plan, with more content being made available to our fans who choose to spend a bit more each month. We at the Half Court Press would appreciate any and all support that you wish to contribute towards our articles, podcasts, and interviews.
Okay, so I would like to talk a little bit more about your background specifically. Whereabouts are you from in Australia?
Yeah, so I'm from a country town. It's about just over an hour northeast, but it's more east north. It's more just in and up a little. I'm from Perth. That's where I was born and I grew up there, and I moved to Perth for high school at 13 and boarded for a few years, and then moved out of home when I was 17 for hockey and finished year 12 living out of home in Perth.
Where did you go to school and college? Where did you get your degree?
Okay, so yeah, so after I finished school in Perth, I then went to Curtin University, and it's quite a good uni because it's actually where our hockey program is based, as well as where most of the club games are based. So they're quite supportive of us as hockey athletes. So yeah, I did at Curtin University. which is the home of the Perth Hockey Stadium campus, yeah.
Do you play much university hockey? Is there much of a uni hockey set up in Australia?
It's more of like, it's a bit more casual than club. It's a bit more of a drinking culture and stuff. And I did get the chance, it must have been 2020 when I was having a bit of a break from hockey before I made the Australian team. I did get a chance to play in some uni hockey games, and it was quite fun, but there wasn't a lot of serious hockey played, which was quite enjoyable.
Sounds a bit like my university hockey background as well.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Like, who's that drunk guy in the goalkeeping pads? Oh, it's just Tayo.
Well, I actually played on the field for the uni games. I had to go. I was like, oh, I'll play on the field and do a couple of games and goals. That was my deal. So it was quite fun.
So who were your first teams and first clubs?
Yeah, so if we're talking club, so I obviously played a lot of junior hockey in my hometown in Northam. And then once I kind of got to that age where I was starting to get good, I made my first like state rep team when I was 13 as a train on in under 16s. And then I started playing in between Northam and Perth for a year. And then my first hockey club was Curtin University Hockey Club. And then I played there. I played my first Premier League top game when I was 15. And then from there I played, I think it was three grand finals. No, five grand finals. My first 5 years at the club, we didn't miss a grand final. Played 5 years straight, won two, lost three. And then played a couple years more and then decided I needed a change. So then, yeah, I moved to Vic Park Hockey Club and then went back to back the first 2 years. So I've had quite a lot of success when it comes to club hockey, which is great. And then, yeah, for state hockey, my first rep team was when I was 13. And then from there, I just kept going to state trials and getting picked and did. We have like under 15 state, under 18, under 21s. And it was at my first under 18s, that's when I was nationally identified for like a junior. I think I was 17. Yeah, and kind of from there.
Of course, I believe that you were a goalkeeper of a tournament at a junior competition.
Yeah, so that, yeah, so I made pretty much solidified my spot, I would say, like if I'm not being modest, like solidified my spot in the under 21s Oz. I made most of the tours and all that, and then managed to get picked for Junior World Cup after an awful senior state comp. Yeah, my coach was like, we only just pick you, you need to turn it around in 6 weeks, and then went to Junior World Cup and yeah, played well and got goalkeeper at the tournament. So it was a big highlight of my career. Yeah.
So what have been the big successes in your career and suppose the challenges as well?
Yeah, I think big successes, obviously Junior World Cup was an absolute highlight. It was the first time I played like a proper Oz rep tournament. Like we don't really get them that often in Australia. Obviously we don't get to sit on a continent with lots of other countries and play a lot of junior rep hockey. So that was probably a big highlight. We came third and yeah, I got personally rewarded for my efforts, which was great. That was pretty good. A couple of silver state medals, always great playing with your friends that you've grown up with against other state. Obviously my Hockey Roos debut a year after Junior World Cup. And then I think cracking my first Aussie squad in 2021. I was selected 2020, but for the 2021 squad, I think that was probably the biggest success in a way, because it took me 4 years to crack a squad and get another go after I debuted. So it was probably the biggest challenge and the biggest relief and, yeah, probably the biggest success so far. So, yeah, in terms of, like, just me personally. But the team, yeah, winning bronze this year and silver at the Com Games is first medals as a Hockey Roo. And, yeah, it was just a dream, yeah.
World Cup bronze medalist and then silver at the coming games.
Yeah.
Currently ranked third in the world as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty good. Like, just if you look at our team, though, that we did it with, like, it's incredible. Like, it's easy to sit there and look at our rank and say, yep, third in the world, they should be finishing top four, you know, they should be coming home with medals. But for me, I had played 6 games before that tournament, like those tournaments. Some people was there, yeah, most of us were under 10 or like under 20 caps. Some people would just, they'd only just been picked and they were playing these tournaments. One of our most experienced players, Brooke Peris, got injured before the World Cup Com game. So we were out, we're down a player, we're down 200 caps. You know what I mean? Like, I know it's caps to just caps, but for us, these, most of us, these were our first major tournaments ever. And that's a, not an easy feat to throw people headfirst into international hockey without experience. Like, it's not like we've been playing a heap of practice games. We played a few before the tournament, but for some of us, we hadn't played proper international hockey, maybe New Zealand, that's it. I think as a group, we did some incredible to think that, yeah, we only just started and we came away with a bronze medal and a silver medalist. So I think that's what I'm most proud of, is that we're only just getting started and we still came home with medals. So, yeah.
I mean, breaking into that Australian squad, I was doing so well. And as a goalkeeper, trying to compete with Rachel Lynch, it was maybe the best in the world for 3 or 4 years or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. Like, when you have someone who has a wealth of experience, a wealth of knowledge and a lot of respect, it was obviously difficult for me coming along. Alicia Power, who's played like 3 half games for Australia, you know, to like be like, hey, pick me, you know. And then, yeah, obviously I was selected in the 2020 and Brach was dropped. So there was a lot of, you know, media and things like that. And it was difficult, but I have a lot of respect for Rach. I've always looked up to her as a goalkeeper, and to spend the last 6 months of her career with her was fantastic. And I'm just grateful that I got my foot in the door and I played well and I got selected. And that's just the reality. Being that fight to get your foot in the door is really difficult. And there's a lot of mental work you have to do as a goalkeeper, not just physical work and technical.
So as we wind up this section on your background, how did you get into hockey? Why did you become a goalkeeper?
That's a great question. And I don't really have the best answer. So in Australia, usually when you play junior hockey, it's not the first position that's, you know, filled, and you usually have like a rotation system going where everyone has to play goalie once for the season. And I played goalie, and then I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. Like, I played it a couple times and people were like, oh, you know, you're actually pretty good at it. And then suddenly, like, the rotation stops and I'm playing goalkeeper being like, hey, can I have a run on the field? Yeah, and then just kind of got a knack for it and, yeah, just kept going with it, I guess. Yeah, that's how I got into goalkeeping. Yeah, it's not for the faint-hearted, that's for sure.
So what was the attraction to hockey?
I have 2 older brothers and, again, I just followed them with whatever they were doing. We started in soccer and things like that, BMX and played hockey, and I just wanted to do what they were doing. So they were playing hockey on a Saturday morning, so I was playing hockey on a Saturday morning, and then I ended up being the one that stuck it out.
The Half Court Press is on social media. Feel free to follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram.
So moving on to your current career, can you remind us of who you're playing for now in terms of your clubs?
Yeah, so Vic Park Hockey Club and then Perth Thunder Six for Hockey One.
And why are these good? Why are they the best teams in Australia?
Oh, Vic Park Hockey Club, the thing that attracted the club to me was their pack mentality, I guess. Once you're in, there's so many people that just want you to feel supported and want you to do your best and want to play good hockey, so want good people. So I think if you just don't even look at the hockey, I think their off-field is phenomenal. But then, yeah, the hockey is incredible, the way they built their juniors from the ground up. So even our players who aren't national players or state players or identified, they're all incredibly strong hockey players. So I think that's what makes us so strong, and I wouldn't say the best, but currently, yeah, one of the strongest clubs and teams. Thunder Six, I don't even know, like the culture is really good, the hockey's good, we've got a lot of speed, a lot of skill, and I think we scare teams sometimes, so that's probably what I would say about our Thunder Six team. We can give people a bit of a fright, which is great.
So who's on your team with you from the Aussie team?
So it's myself, Shania Tonkin, who first year in the Hockey Roos, Penny Squibb, Carrie Somerville, and Georgia Wilson, all WA girls.
How do you find Hockey One? How's that going?
Yeah, no, it's good. It's only the second year it's been run. I'm excited to see how it goes this year. It's a pretty exciting format. We're traveling for 3 games, so we'll travel around the country for 3 of our games. Some states will come to us. There's quite a lot of pressure to score, which is makes it quite exciting, the hockey. So, you know, there's that incentive to score a field goal to get a conversion to make it 2-0. And then also if you draw a game, it's straight into shootouts. There's no mercy rule. There's no draws. It's just there has to be a winner. So it's quite exciting, the format.
You were saying that the Hockey One League was delayed because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
How's your first season been since the end of the lockdown, end of the pandemic?
Well, we kind of just went full floodgate here in WA. We had our borders. We had the tightest borders in Australia for 2-3 years. And then we just kind of opened the borders in March this year, and we got the season off the ground for club, but there were a lot of games delayed or cancelled because of COVID, because we hadn't had a wave of COVID yet. So a lot of people went down very fast here in WA. So challenging, but we've gotten through the season and managed to get all the games played. So
now this summer has been quite busy for you. You've been away from home for several months. How's that been? How's the summer?
Yeah, I mean, it was cool. I think it was nearly 9 weeks away from Australia. Again, first major tournaments, first. I've never done a long trip away for hockey. It went quite slow, but quite quick. But it was a great group. And I mean, every day was exciting because you were basically playing hockey every day. Came back, felt quite tired afterwards. Like it's a long way to be, long time to be on. But it was awesome. The weather was awesome. The people were awesome. And the hockey was great.
So medaling at the World Cup in Holland and Spain, and then medaling at the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham in the UK. Yeah. What was your favourite? What was the best moments? What did you enjoy about it? Any good stories that you can tell us?
I mean, the World Cup was amazing because I'd mainly just watched international hockey. This was my first time really being a part of it. And just seeing all the players walk around that you watch on replays and things like that was pretty cool. The hockey was, yeah, insane at the World Cup. I mean, highlights was, yeah, I mean, us coming down from 1-0 to get that bronze medal 2-1 and just having that gut feeling that you're going to do it the whole game. It was pretty special to be a part of, and just to see everyone so stoked was cool. And then the Comm Games was slightly different because you were part of, you know, a bigger team. Like it wasn't just your hockey team, you were part of Team Australia. So there was a lot of cool things, like you got lots of uniform and, yeah, you interacted with other people from other sports. Yeah, it was just slightly different but still really cool. Honestly, I don't really have any funny, like, exciting stories when I wasn't playing hockey. I was sleeping or doing something regarding hockey. I mean, probably speaking, I got to speak to Cody Simpson. You probably won't, or you might know who that is, but he's a international singer from Australia turned Australian swimmer. And I managed to maybe speak to him at the coffee machine. It was pretty cool. My Com Games, but yeah, that's my highlight.
Yeah, star spotting. I think it's a lot of that. What I hear from athletes a lot is it's so cool I get to mingle with these guys and these athletes in the dinner hall and stuff like this.
Yeah. Yeah. You're surrounded by people who are doing great things at sport, and you kind of feel not like an athlete when you're next to them. Like some of the athletics people, I was just like, wow, I'm not an athlete. I'm just someone who people hit balls at. They actually run and jump and, do stuff.
I don't know, Alicia. We both play in the same position, but I think there's some physical differences between you and me. It's apart from the tennis.
You're in
slightly better shape than I am.
You just feel like that, though, when you're talking to some people who just run 100 metres in, 3 seconds. I don't know how fast they run, but they run fast. It's pretty cool.
The Half Court Press is a multi-sport media outlet. You can check out our articles, opinion pieces, and PDF magazines on our website, www.halfcourtpressmagazine.com.
So, moving on to the fun bit of the interview.
Yep.
Where you get to give us your opinions on the world of hockey.
Perfect. Sounds good.
What's domestic hockey like in Australia? Because I believe it's centralised, isn't it? It's currently it's based in Perth, Western Australia, but there's chat of it moving. How does the centralised system have an effect on domestic hockey in Australia?
The centralised system means that we all move to one spot to train and live and exist. And I guess that means that you're taking the people who are Australia's best to one location. So obviously for our Perth League, when we're all playing and allowed to play, we have probably one of the stronger leagues in Australia, and that probably weakens other leagues in Australia. Whether that has an effect on development, I wouldn't know because I've never been through hockey where it hasn't been centralized. So I assume there might be an effect, but I couldn't be the judge of that. But in terms of going forward, it looks like, we'll kind of remain at least semi-centralized. I just think for me personally, training with the best every day is how you're going to get better. Obviously, there's pros of if you're at home, you allow the development of people coming through as well. And there's obviously players in those domestic leagues and things like that that could be the next Australian players and are good enough, and then you would be obviously developing with them. But at the moment, my opinion is if you want to be the best, you train the best. That means that you're all in one spot and you're training every day, pushing each other and bring in and across to then develop them.
Yes. So I'm interested in this because in England GB, we have a similar centralised program in the southeast of England.
Yeah.
And if you want to play for England or Great Britain, you have to live within driving distance of the training base.
Yeah.
The only thing is it takes all the best players away from the North England. The top women's team in Manchester in the North England got relegated a couple of years ago. And it's the last important team in the Women's Premier League.
Mm.
All the best Welsh and Scottish players are taken away from Wales and away from Scotland. Charlotte Watson, Sarah Jameson, Emmy Costello, Sarah Jones, Leah Wilkinson, they all get taken away from their clubs to live in Scotland, which kind of then goes, well, the best players in those leagues then don't get to train with the best players, therefore they don't fulfill their potential.
Yeah, that's the cons of it. And I think you can do it in a way that, like for me, I value going back and playing club and going training with what we call like WACE, which would be my WA next tier of girls coming through. Because it also challenges me as a high performance athlete. I'm going there mixing with people who I don't train with, and they challenge me in that way, if that makes sense. But you also, there needs to be a give and take. Like, girls need to go home now. I think girls should go home and start training with their hockey one team and all the state girls, sort of thing, to allow that development. Do you know what I mean? We should be encouraged to play club, or we should be encouraged to go back to where we're from, I guess, and train.
So that double system you have, the sort of two-tier domestic system, the club system and then the state system, maybe it allows you a bit more leeway in that respect.
Yeah, so we have like club, state, and then like obviously Oz. And then every year we have the state league, and that is a selection thing for us. Like, we have to play in that to be selected for Oz, sort of thing. Yeah. Unless you have exemptions and you're playing in Europe, or do you know what I mean? So it's like we kind of have to go back and train with where we came from to then play in that league to then get selected. So it kind of works a bit. So not as much as it probably should, but yeah.
So it adds a little bit more nuance to your system, which is a bit different.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it could still be better. Like, there's definitely going to be people who say, no, no way, we should be training at home, like, you know what I mean, who don't agree with a centralised program. But for me, I think there's a pretty good balance every year of, yeah, centralised, decentralised.
What do you think of the Pro League? Is it a help or a hindrance to the development of hockey on a global scale?
Well, I've never played in Pro League yet, but I think the more we can play games, the better it is for visibility. If people are waiting 6 months to see their teams play, I mean, what, they're going to go watch other sports instead. Do you know what I mean? Like, I guess the more we play, the more visibility, the more we can get people to games, the more we're dragging kids along. Kids go, oh, my God, that's so cool, I want to play. You know what I mean? It's just the more you see it, the more you want to be it, right? Like, it's with any celebrity, influencer, athlete. The more you see them, the more you hear about them, the more you learn about them, the more connected you feel to the sport, the more likely you're going to stay and play and be a part of the community. I think that's what it's about. It's not just about getting people to play for their country. It's about creating that community, which is probably more important to society than being an athlete, an elite athlete. It's about growing the sport and inclusivity and getting people out there and, yeah, growing it as a community, having that base.
So far in this series, I've asked a similar question to Rowan Harris of Canada, Fumilela Mbande of South Africa, Francisca Tala of Chile, and yeah, they've all said none of whose countries play in the Pro League. And they all said, we would love to play in it, but we can't. And so therefore, it's making the better teams like Australia and New Zealand and England / GB better.
Yeah.
And we're not developing at the same rate, and it creates a two-tier system.
I agree with that. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I'm privileged in the fact that my country can not only... I mean, there's a financial component, right? Like, my country can afford to put us in Pro League next year. I think there is a finance component to it. So I sit here privileged saying, oh, yeah, Pro League's great. Like, I get to be a part of it in the future. It's great exposure for my sport in Australia. But I do recognise that it's not for every country. Like, not everyone gets to play.
How do we get around that?
It's a great question. Maybe they should make, like, a Hockey India League that they did a few years ago and people can pick players up. I'm not sure, but yeah, maybe there needs to be another format, like a second tier, like people, like, you know, in club hockey where, you know, if you play well and you finish top two, you get to move into Pro League and bottom two moves out, something like that, where it's like there's something to fight for, you can play hockey and then make it into Pro League, which is the top league, or something like that. That's how I would do it, probably. I don't think it would be helpful to have every country playing. Like, I think then it needs to be like a top eight and next eight, but let's have a system where you win and you finish top two here, finish body two there, you're down. You're down into the second Pro League Two or something like that. I don't know. Yeah.
We do a similar thing over here in Europe with our continental championships. We have done.
Yeah.
If you get to the final of the B grades, you get to play in the A grades.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like most club systems, like, but it would be for Pro League for countries. And then what they can do then as well to financially support teams to be a part of that, whether there's a flow-on effect or, you know, piggybacking, I don't know, to allow opportunity for everyone. Like, we're trying to promote hockey as an inclusive sport. So I do agree with those girls saying, well, we can't play, so it's not inclusive, because it isn't. Like, that's just the reality of it.
And you think that would help develop a better fan culture as well, having those games?
Probably, yeah. Like, imagine, it's like soccer. Like, I've been watching bloody Ted Lasso. Like, it's not reality, but, like, you know, the fact that teams can be in a bottom tier and you get the fans behind you to, like, cheer them on, and you can get so close and you get promoted, like, wouldn't that build, like, an awesome culture where you're, like, backing your team to get up into Pro League? I don't know. It could bring something.
Is there a gap between men's and women's hockey? And if so, what are the issues and how do we solve it?
This one's a loaded question. I think it's really dependent on how you view women's sport and men's sport. If you compare women to men, you're always going to see a gap. And I think that's just a point of view. But if you actually just look at it as the men's game and the women's game, and you respect the game individually, you're going to see that, like, we have the potential to have just as much culture and, like, spark. And, yeah, like, our game is awesome to watch, and it's really technical and tactical. And I think people view and they try to compare the two. And I think that's where the gap comes from. In terms of exposure and things like that, I would say the men get maybe a bit more exposure in terms of, like, content, maybe media. Again, I'm not going to say 100%, because there are a lot of people doing a lot of great work to bridge that. But I think there's so much potential there to close that point of view gap between comparing men and women in hockey, instead of just respecting us for our game and the men's game as individual sport. I don't know if that makes any sense. Yeah. I look at what Argentinian women can do and their fan base and their prowess and whatever, and I'm like, all the teams have that in the women's comp, but I feel like they get a lot more fans and media exposure and stuff, and I just think there's so much more potential there, which I think would help close that gap.
I tend to find that testosterone can be a bit of a cheat sometimes. It covers many sins in terms of technique and intelligence. Oh, he's faster and more powerful. Well, but he's an idiot. He can't play.
Yeah, no, it's like the brute force versus finesse sort of thing. Like, I get that, where you're coming from. Yeah, I think people look at us and they can't run as fast as a man, or they can't, but it's like, we overcome that with technique. We overcome that with tactics. It's the old, you know, classic comparing women playing one sport to men playing one sport. I think it's just stupid. You should never compare women to men in the same sport. You just need to look at compare women to women, compare the, you know, the teams within the team, the comp. I don't know. I just think you're just shooting yourself in the foot if you do that.
We've just had a lovely World Cup, of which you played in. And let's not call it the Women's World Cup, let's just call it the World Cup.
Yeah.
And in that competition, we had the Granato sisters.
Yeah.
Wonderful set of forwards to watch. A Rosie Malone in your team.
Yeah.
One of my favourite attacking players in the world. A Gigi Oliva, who's got a world-class brain.
Yeah. I could list so many players where I'm like, even Caitlin Nobbs, for example, for our team, like, I've watched her play against boys and she has schooled them, not because she runs faster than them or, I don't know, she's just so much smarter and just can absolutely just school them in a contest. And it's like, you know, like, where's that recognition? Like, I don't know. It's hard because I respect the men's game and I respect the women's game, but I don't compare them. I just think it's the worst thing you can do. There's so many players out there, though, I would love to see take on their male component.
This goes back to what we were chatting about a bit before, about you not considering yourself to be an athlete. Well, compared to me, it's not like for like, is it? I'm 11 years older than you. I'm a little bit overweight. You know what I mean?
I know.
We're playing the same position. But
We both just got to get in the way of the ball.
Well, that's a bit easier for me, I suppose. I'm a bit wider. But
I just think it's something that you either are going to accept it or you're not. And then you're going to have people in the grey area. And it's those people that we need to convince, I guess, for the longevity of the sport and women's sport. Yeah.
The Half Court Press is now on Patreon. Patreon is a well-known and trusted online platform that allows our fans to support the sports journalism that we create. We offer a tiered subscription plan, with more content being made available to our fans who choose to spend a bit more each month. We at the Half Court Press would appreciate any and all support that you wish to contribute towards our articles, podcasts, and interviews.
Let's talk about goalkeeping. What makes a good goalkeeper? Who are the top goalkeepers in the world and why?
What makes a good goalkeeper? I think something that's not always highlighted and not commended, but is communication. I think something I value highly and I teach or tell anyone that's willing to listen is that if you can stop something from happening, say a shot on goal or a goal, without doing anything, that's your first priority. And I think communication is, not talked about enough and undervalued. And it's something I pride myself on, is that I will get people to do stuff so that that doesn't happen for a start. It's the first line of defense, is mitigating a goal or a goal shot. So that's what I would say, number one, what makes a good goalkeeper. Number two is more of an attitude, I guess, or a mentality. Someone who's really assertive, especially as a goalkeeper. You can tell when you walk out on the pitch, like, this goalkeeper's assertive, knows what they're doing, owns their space. And then number three, I think, technique. There's a lot of hype around goalkeepers being agile, and agility is so important. Don't get me wrong. Like, I work a lot to be powerful, explosive, agile, but there's no point in doing that if your technique's wrong and you're going to just cough the ball up or raise it at someone or muff the save, I guess. So we spend a lot of time getting our technique right so that, again, we don't have to make a second save or we don't have to scramble. We work a lot on save and that's it. That's all you have to do. It's gone where you want it to. It's cleared the circle, gone over the baseline or to your defender. So that's probably what the order I would value. Yeah, as I said, there's so many more other components like strength, agility, explosiveness, but I think there are three things that people maybe don't value as much, but I certainly do and we certainly do here in Hockey Australia.
In terms of communication, I've seen goals scored against teams at World Cup level, and I suspect it's because the goalkeeper's not noticed where the right winger is and not told the defender to drop back or something.
Yeah, assisting them in contests. Like, the amount of times you're in a two-on-one contest, being able to give them confidence to hold a certain line, force them one way, can mean the difference of, you know, having to do a one-on-one or forcing them to the corner of the circle and then defenders coming back, like that sort of thing. Like, you can change a situation with just your voice to make it less lethal, I guess. In terms of the best goalkeepers in the world right now, I'm pretty biased. I think we have fantastic goalkeepers here in Australia. Jocelyn Bartram, who I keep with and share the net with over the two tournaments, we managed to keep goals out until the finals. So we went through all our round games without letting one in. And it's not just because of our defence. Obviously, we had a very good defence and I highly rate our defence, but we have very good goalkeepers here in Australia. So I'm a little bit biased there and I have to give her a shout out. She made one of the best saves I've seen in a long time in our final for bronze at the World Cup. I'm sure you can find on the internet. It's very good. In terms of other goalkeepers, I have to say who do we play? Was it Scotland? The Com Games? The Scottish keeper was phenomenal. I don't know her name.
Which one? The taller one or the shorter one?
I couldn't tell you. But the one that played made about 50 saves and I was just like, how? She was quite good. I would put her in my list of somewhere. I don't know her name, but if she's listening, you're phenomenal.
So I'll make a link here. For more on Amy Gibson of Scottish Hockey, listen to back episodes of this.
I'm so sorry to anyone listening. I don't know a lot of people's names in hockey. I'm still new to the scene, so I'm very sorry. I mean, obviously you have your big names, I guess, like Maddie Hinch, Aisha McFerrin from Ireland. I still remember her World Cup. The last one was like, Jesus. Yeah, I'm going to be completely honest. I don't know a lot of people. And I'm generally not watching the goalkeepers. But, yeah, I mean, you have your big dogs. But I just had to give Jossie B a shout out because of my biased opinion. But, yeah, that's probably fresh off my mind.
Who have been the best players that you've played with? Who have been the best players that you've played against?
The best players I've played with over my career, I don't know if you remember, but Kobe McGurk, she was a hockey roo, phenomenal defender. I played a lot of club hockey with her. I never played Australian, but she was just unreal. I say probably a lot of my teammates currently, Jane Claxton is just unreal, like just above everyone in terms of her ability in the midfield. Caitlin Nobbs is going to be, she is now, but she's going to be someone who is going to leave a mark on international hockey, that's for sure. Played against, that one's a tough one as well because that was my first two major tournaments and I'm not very good with names. I really rate the Belgian forward. She also drag flicks. I don't know her name. At one point she was wearing, like, she had a broken nose in pro league. She was wearing the
Engelbert?
Maybe, yeah, I'm not sure. She was wearing the black cast over her nose. I think she's quality. She's probably one of my favourite international players to watch. I still don't know her name, but, yeah, any Dutch player, I guess. Gonzalini can drag flick like I've never seen before from Argentina. Any of the Dutch players, their whole team.
Yeah, I mean, that final, that in Argentina. I mean,
it was a training for them. Probably, I don't know. That's a bit mean. Yeah, it was a show. That's for sure.
Felice Albers impressed me in that tournament.
Yeah. Was she the half? No, I think I know the one you're talking about, Albers, and she's quite tall.
Taller lady by herself. She's called that.
She can run. Yeah, now rated her.
Okay, so as we begin to wind up, what are your plans for the future?
That's a loaded question. Obviously, for me, the Olympics is the pinnacle of our sport. So I've always wanted to go to the Olympics. I've always wanted to win a medal at the Olympics. So that's hopefully in my future. That's a long-term goal. But I'm really want to be a part of Pro League next year. It's probably more of a short-term goal. And, yeah, I think a long career. Yeah, hopefully in the future.
What makes hockey special?
I think it's the community. It's the little people. It's not the big dogs or the, you know, it's all the little people that you grew up with and you met at club hockey and who are now like your biggest supporters when you're playing in the green and gold, and the community that you leave behind when you go overseas that supports you while you're away. So I think it's definitely the community for me and the people in it that makes hockey special.
If you could describe Australian hockey in three words, what would they be?
Oh, okay. Competitive, fast, and trying to think a word for strong. Physical. That's it. That's what I want to use. Physical.
Alicia Power, goalkeeper for the Australian national team. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
This has been a Half Court Press production by Teo McLeod. If you have enjoyed this show, please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and Facebook.